Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel. The all-new Opel Mokka. With a new visor front face and pure panel interior, this is Opel.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
We've had lots of messages coming in on sleep all morning. We'll be talking to sleep expert Professor Andrew Coogan very shortly. So keep the questions coming in for him, 51551. Next, though, a murder for $45,000, a baby elephant for $7,000, all the way down to €25 for a fake driver's licence. These are just some of the things available on the dark web, and the recent hack of the HSE's IT services has revealed just how sinister the underbelly of the internet can be. Paul Seedwyer is CEO of Cyber Risk International, and he's with me on the line now. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning, Claire.
Thanks very much for being with us and for agreeing to explain all of this to us. How difficult is it, firstly, to access the dark web? Because most of us will never have gone there.
It's not very difficult at all. It's there's a website, basically, that people would visit to download a piece of software that takes literally minutes to install. And when that software is installed, you simply load that software up and you're able to access the dark web.
Is it a dangerous thing to do, to access it?
Well, yes, because it's essentially a dangerous part of town. If you think about it in relation to the physical world, you're going to a really bad part of town where there's lots of criminals, there's lots of bad things happening, and a lot of people who visit it essentially become victims themselves.
Mm-hmm. But there are some legitimate businesses that use it.
Absolutely. I mean, for example, the BBC themselves would be on the dark web. It is a way to remain anonymous. It's a way for people that maybe want to whistleblow or want to be able to exchange information in safety, whether they're journalists, whether they're dissidents. And it's a way for them to actually, be safe and secure in a way to exchange information. Mm-hmm. But it's also a way that the bad guys, cyber evil of the world, has got together and used as a method for them to proliferate their own business models.
So look, take us through some of the things that are on there and available to purchase.
Well, pretty much anything. I mean, the first thing is that people, if they visited the dark web, is they would be shocked at the indecent imagery of children and child abuse imagery that's for sale. And about 80% of the traffic is of that nature. The marketplaces themselves operate, essentially, they look very like an eBay. And they have customer ratings, they have different price points, and the different traders on selling their wares through those marketplace websites. And that's anything from drugs, guns, fake IDs, crimeware. So crimeware is software used to carry out cybercrime. You can hire specialists, crime as a service, to carry out different parts of crime. So if you weren't able to hack into someone's mobile phone, you can hire someone to do that for you. And it's pretty much a marketplace of everything that's unlawful in the world.
You sent us some examples of this, and what I'm looking at here now is a screen sample that explains to me how much I would need to pay if I wanted to murder somebody, have somebody murdered. And it goes through, is the person a regular person, and gives a price for that, someone who you'd like to have declared missing in action, someone you'd like to have declared dead in an accident, and the prices go on in that way. Can you just describe that for people?
Sure. I mean, essentially, there's a lot of fake murder for hire sites out there, but there's also essentially real ones. And there's lots of real life cases of people being caught hiring people to murder people through these sites as well. And a lot of these sites, the success of them there is based on the fact that they're community driven. So by that I mean is that if someone's going to trust that website, they're looking at previous customers' testimonials or proof of evidence that something has actually happened. Whether it's a beating, and on that particular price list, you can see there's even prices to rape or beat people up and so on as well. Mm-hmm. And this is basically violence for hire. And even one of the most famous stories on the dark web is the Silk Road Marketplace, which turned over $1 billion in its first year selling drugs. But the founder of that website himself was arrested by the FBI for trying to hire someone to kill one of his business partners.
Yeah, and I'm also looking at this other example you've given us, which is a diagram or a graphic of various organs from the human body and price tags attached.
Yeah, I mean, the reality is the dark web is humanity connected, so it's evil connected as well. So all of those really, really dark areas, whether it's snuff movies, whether it's ordering organs of human beings from people that are being trafficked, it's all of that. It's terrorism. It's child abuse imagery. It's everything dark and horrible in the world. They find their other connection points around the world to build their own little marketplaces and their own trade mm-hmm. between these things. And whether that's trafficking endangered species of animals, whether that's going on to see dogs being beaten up and abused or being fighting, that people will pay to watch that kind of thing. All of this nefarious, horrible, evil activity, as we refer to it as cyber evil, takes place a lot of it on the dark web.
It's so grim. Can it not be stopped? Are there attempts to stop it?
There are lots of attempts to stop it, but effectively, it's not all bad. So, I mean, it was put together by the United States Navy, who were aware that their analysts who were analyzing information, essentially spying on different people around the world, were being identified as who they were. So they created this piece of software called Tor, T-O-R, the Onion Router. And that software, they then decided they were allowed to become free, so anybody could remain anonymous and hidden on the internet. And that's essentially why it's there. So you will have legitimate sites, as I mentioned, BBC, and so on like that. You'll have really genuine reasons and ethical reasons for wanting to remain anonymous online, but to close it down, it's a bit like a whack-a-mole game. I mean, there's lots of efforts there. We've seen even in Germany in the last few weeks a website with 400,000 users on a paedophile site being shut down. But as soon as that's down, something else. But there is more that can be done by technology companies to stop this kind of imagery and this kind of content being uploaded again onto these sites. So it's not a helpless thing. It's something that we need more resources and more effort into doing it, and more pressure upon the software companies.
Yeah, because, I mean, the screenshots that you sent us, it looks just like Amazon. And then you have the people who are selling drugs. You talked about the customer ratings there. They'll be trying to, because they're a business, they're trying to collect as many of those as they can, all of the good ones then they're promoting on the sites. They're very professional operations.
Completely professional. I mean, Silk Road turned, as I say, over $1 billion in its first year of trading. And that was mainly drugs that they were selling. And it also causes a challenge for society, because what they were touting was that it was safer to buy high-quality drugs on a site like Silk Road as it was to maybe go to a nasty part of town, maybe get poison drugs, something to cut up with something else, maybe get beaten up, your money stolen. And this was a way to introduce people into experimenting with drugs, getting high quality stuff, all of that. And that was their premise, and that was why they were so successful. So there's a challenge for society on how, you know, different generations are going to operate if they have the availability and the use to be able to use this kind of technology and get it delivered in the post safely.
And that comes down even to the offer of free trade cocaine.
Absolutely. I mean, there was that extreme example of fair trade cocaine, where they were saying if you ethically want to buy your cocaine from a fair trade farmer, that was available too. And I mean, these guys are business people; they're entrepreneurs. They embrace innovation and technology, and they're brilliant at it. I mean, most ratings up there are a 4.5-star to 5-star rating because their customer service is absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, and they know what they're doing, so they're selling that. They're selling that in a marketing sense. You mentioned the lower level stuff. So, and I was saying it there in the introduction, a driving license for about $25, is that on the mark?
Yeah, so absolutely. So basically, the sort of things, we looked at this recently, because obviously we're doing a lot of sort of back channeling on in relation to the HSE and so on, and see if we can help out in that area. And what we've noticed is there's a lot of things, like, for example, bank statements. So what we'd call a PSD template or a Photoshop template of a lived-in bank statement. And the idea there is that people can buy those kind of things, fill in their lived-in bank statement, and then go down and get credit in their local retailer, where all they need is a driving license and a bank statement, and they might get 3,000 euros credit. Therefore, they'll spend 2,995 euros. They'll walk out with any checks being done on them with fake documents. So this is the kind of scams that we see going on all of the time within retail and so on, not just in Ireland, but obviously around the world. So they'll build up a portfolio to steal your identity.
And what about those ads that claim they can break into someone's data, which you mentioned earlier, Paul? I mean, does that include being able to access your WhatsApp messages?
Essentially, yes, because there's lots of tools out there that can be used to circumvent pretty much anything. So if you're willing to spend the right kind of money and access the right kind of resources, they'll be able to do it. I mean, this is essentially the kind of tool.
Paul, I think everyone would be really surprised about that, because the reason we all love WhatsApp is because we're told it's encrypted end-to-end, completely safe, completely secure. Not so, you're saying.
So it's encrypted end-to-end in relation to the messages leaving, but if someone has remote access to your phone handset, then they're able to see what you can see. And even when they're seeing it, the message is encrypted as it's leaving the phone, but they're not necessarily sniffing it as it leaves the phone. They may have actual remote access to your handset to see what you're seeing on the screen.
Mm-hmm. What are they charging for that?
Including your microphone, your camera.
Okay. That's terrifying. And what are they charging for that sort of stuff?
Well, that would range anything from a couple of hundred dollars up to a few thousand dollars, depending on who you're going to use. But it would go into the huge money when it's nation state. So we saw this, for example, with Saudi Arabia, who used an Italian company to use surveillance software, such as I'm talking about, to track Khashoggi and identify where he was before they lured him into the embassy and chopped him up, essentially, and murdered him. And we've seen the same even against Jeff Bezos, the richest man in the world, and the same software was used against him on his phone.
Mm-hmm. Paul, I was going to say it's good to talk to you, but it's not really. That was quite scary. Thank you very much indeed, though. Paul C. Dwyer, CEO of Cyber Risk International. We'll be talking about sleep next.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.